This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Scott, what do we know about the conditions on the ground in Aleppo at the moment?
Well, at the moment, we know that there are about up to 5,000 people, as I speak, who are still trying to be removed from eastern Aleppo City and the last opposition districts. Now, once those people are removed, the pro-Assad forces, mainly foreign forces, Iranian forces, Hezbollah, Iranian-led Afghan and Iraqi militia, alongside some units of the Assad regime, they'll move in and take those final districts, and they will claim victory in Aleppo, reuniting the city for the first time since July 2012. But that immediate story really should be put in the context of years of attacks on civilians, which have killed tens of thousands of them in Aleppo, wounded many others. In the last few months, that scale of suffering and death has increased because in late August, Russia and the Assad regime reimposed a siege on the city, effectively starving the people, cutting off food, cutting off supplies, cutting off medicine. They then carried out almost incessant bombing, which destroyed almost all the medical facilities in the opposition areas. And what you were really doing was, in advance of the final ground assault by the pro-Assad forces, you're just trying to terrorize the civilian population to surrender or leave.
Looking into the safety evacuations that have been happening, Russian and Turkish ministers expected the evacuation operations to be completed by the end of last week. Just to clarify, how many people were escorted out of eastern Aleppo?
In the last week, probably around about at least 40,000 have been removed. And you'll notice I don't use the word evacuated. Evacuated means the people wanted to leave the area. They wanted to leave their homes. They were forcibly removed. For that, in the final weeks of the pro-Assad offensive that took over opposition districts, there's not a firm estimate, but let's say probably up to about 100,000 had fled. So all in all, you've had a population transfer of about 140,000 people would be, I think, my estimate at this point in the last month. That leaves some people, and again, we're not sure of the number, but probably tens of thousands of people who have chosen to, amid the destruction, still remain in East Aleppo and risk being under the Assad rule, even though it means that, for example, for men who are of fighting age, they risk being forcibly conscripted into the Syrian army or being detained.
One recent issue that has been happening in the last week includes the assassination of the Russian ambassador in Ankara. Would you say this will increase tensions in East Aleppo, or possibly between Russia and Syria?
I actually think in the short term, the immediate effect will be to draw Russia and Turkey closer together. And that's a huge development because since the Syrian uprising in March 2011, Russia has been an essential supporter of the Assad regime, whereas Turkey had backed the Syrian opposition. But I think what we're seeing now since the summer, as part of a reconciliation between the Turkish President Erdogan and the Russian President Putin, has been a deal that has been struck. And that is that the pro-Assad forces would be allowed to carry on this bombardment and these attacks that eventually would take over all of Aleppo, whereas the Turks, who brought in their own military across the border in late August alongside rebels, they will hold much of Aleppo province outside the city. So that's an effective partition of northern Syria. Now, the question is, I don't think the ambassador's assassination disturbs that deal. I think the question actually moves on from this, and that is, will Russia deal with Turkey and accept a partition of Syria that leaves the opposition still in control of parts of the north, including Idlib province, as well as parts of Aleppo province? Or will Russia follow the Assad regime or agree with the Assad regime and Iran that no, the opposition and the rebellion have to be crushed in a place like Idlib? That for me is the major question, is whether Russia really sides with the Turks now, sort of puts a freeze on the fighting, or whether it risks breaking with the Turks and supports a renewed military offensive, leading that offensive alongside Iran in support of the Assad regime.
With that being said, Russian President Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan recently issued a joint statement saying they will cooperate to resolve the Syrian war. Is this an effective way to rectify this issue?
Well, there's a couple of dimensions of this. In the near future, what the Russians are going to proclaim are renewed political talks beginning in Kazakhstan between representatives of the Assad regime and what they would call the Syrian opposition. Now, in fact, what they call the opposition are usually a collection of relatively weak figures and for example, also representatives of the Syrian Kurds, and probably no one that's really from the main opposition since 2011, and certainly no one from rebel groups. So the question is, do those political talks, are they merely simply a front for Russian maneuvers? Will the Turks agree on that condition, or will the Turks seek to get an expansion of the political talks to bring in some people who have been in the mainstream of the Syrian opposition for 5 years? Interestingly enough, and it is just a claim at this point, that the discussions around those talks will expand to include Saudi Arabia. Now, if that happens, that is a huge signal, because Saudi Arabia, of course, has been probably the leading backer of the Syrian opposition and rebels since 2011. And I think that they would call for a more representative opposition to be at these talks. So that's what I would be watching for on the political side. But as I said, that is sort of in tension with what happens on the military front, because if the Assad regime demands a crushing of the rebels and the opposition inside Syria, I think that sort of ruins any chance for a political resolution.
The UK and US have also stepped up criticism of the role of Russia and Iran in Aleppo. In October, both countries were considering economic sanctions against Syria and Russia in response to the bombardment of Aleppo. Can you give us an update on this?
Let me start with the US first, and let me use an American phrase. They're spitting into the wind, and that is the statements that they bring out. For example, accusing Russia in a session at the UN, accusing the Russians of barbarity alongside the Assad regime. That rhetoric means absolutely nothing if you take no action which tries to limit what the Russians are doing. And the Americans haven't done that. That's what I mean by the Russians have stood aside or have been pushed aside with the final recapture of Aleppo and the mass killing of civilians, as well as the attacks on rebels. President Obama has been extremely cautious. His Secretary of State, John Kerry, who wants a political resolution, but he wants it so badly that he has been led by the nose by Moscow since September 2013. Russia says, oh, okay, let's just take this step, when Moscow's goal all along was to keep President Assad in power, was to save the Assad regime from collapse, and then to erode the opposition and rebels. And the Americans have essentially gone along with that. So the move that said, you know, that said we might have sanctions on the Russians since the summer, that was never going to happen. John Kerry made one strong statement in October that could have had an effect. And he said, let's have a no-fly zone over Aleppo. Let's stop military aircraft from flying. And within days, he backed away from that.
What about the UK? British Prime Minister Theresa May has also condemned Assad and his Russian and Iranian supporters. Have the sanctions been successful?
Now, what's happened, I think, with European countries, not just Britain, has been a little bit more interesting. And that I think France, in particular, does want a meaningful step to limit what the Russians have done. And they propose sanctions not only on the Assad regime, but further sanctions on Russian officials. And that effort failed once it went to the entire European Union. Italy led the objections. Italy has a lot of economic ties, or has had a lot of economic ties with Russia, and they don't really want to give those up. So they blocked, or they and other countries blocked, really taking any meaningful steps against the Russians. Where the European Union is now, including Britain, I think in recent days, is they know they're not going to get sanctions on Russia, so they're trying to split Russia away from Iran. They're trying to say to the Russians, okay, let's truly have a political discussion now. Let's stop the military operations. They know that the Iranians don't want to stop. They know the Iranians are really wanting to support the Assad regime in further actions against the opposition and rebellion. But the European Union is calculating that if they can get Moscow to separate themselves, that might overrule the Iranians and try to open the space for political talks.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.